Before beginning, we are providing a trigger warning for this episode. Thank you. Welcome to the Bicast, a podcast for the bisexual community. With us, we have Ron Cherisha, activist and author of Bi Men Coming Out Every Which Way and Bears on Bears, and also, is it Hibernation? Is that correct?
Hibernation, yeah, is a book that an anthology I did last year, a collection of bear poetry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very well received. And he is going to talk about his new work, Extraordinary Adventures of Mula Nasruddin Anani, and it's, is that close?
it's no, Mula Nasruddin.
Mula Nasruddin, okay. Nani, Unexpurgated Stories of the Beloved Wise Fool from the Middle East, from the Middle and Far East, and it is a sequel to The Uncommon Sense of the Immortal Mula Nasruddin, Stories, Jests, and Donkey Tales of the Beloved Persian Folk Hero. Welcome, Ron.
Well, hey, thank
welcome.
You.
I should have taken that. I had it.
You had that, huh?
I knew it. Yeah. I study the Middle East because the world, you have to in this world.
Yeah.
Well,
so Ron,
please go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm in my mid-50s, and I'm originally from Detroit, and I'm married to a wonderful fellow, Rocco, and we live in New Milford, Connecticut. And I've been doing bi activism primarily, in a variety of ways, but primarily through my writing and editing several books. I have three books on bisexuality, men's bisexuality, that were named Lammy finalists, as is this new book, The Extraordinary Adventures of Mula Nasruddin, is up for a Lammy. So wish me luck on June 1st.
I do wish you luck on that. That will be, that would be quite great. Yeah, your book, The Bi Men Coming Out Every Which Way, was nominated in 2006. Is that correct?
Right. And then I also did a collection of bi men's erotica called Bi Guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 years later, I edited an anthology which was also doubled as an issue of the Journal of Bisexuality on the 60th anniversary of the publication of the Kinsey Mail Report.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I mean, it was called Bisexual Perspectives on the Life and Work of Alfred C. Kinsey. As you can tell, I like long titles.
just to refresh the old people's memory, when did that come out of the Journal of Bisexuality? What year was that?
The first two books, Bi Men and Bi Guys, came out in 2005 and 2006. And
Kinsey.
And Kinsey came out 2 years later.
Yeah, I remember reading that. It's been so long, I can't remember any of it, but it was a great piece, I remember.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I read the essay excerpt on your website from your story on by men coming out every which way. It was quite impressive, and I look forward to actually reading the book here.
Thank you. Well, I mean, I've used my own coming out process as a bi man who for close to three decades identified as a gay man.
Mm-hmm.
But who had always had, you know, these very strong sexual feelings towards women that just didn't go away no matter what my, you know, the other part of my life. But, and then about 10 years ago, I came out as bisexual, finally, and got involved in the bisexual activist community.
Yeah, I'm kind of a late bloomer myself. I just came out 3 years ago,
yeah.
And I was mostly in the closet to myself.
Ron, I'll tell you, I remember you from those days, but I thought you had been out. It didn't seem to me like you were just coming out in those days.
Well, I was out as a gay man. I mean, I went to Gay Liberation Front meetings in Detroit when I was still in high school. Yeah. So, I mean, I've always been pretty much out there as a gay guy, but then,
yeah.
I mean, I also contributed a story to the new anthology that was edited by Robin Oakes and Dr. Haruki, recognize the voices of bi men. And so that's also up for a Lambda Literary Award this year, too.
Yes.
So I have
it's a real tough contest in that category, I will tell you. It's great that we have so many great books, nonfiction books in this, right. This year. I'm just like, a competition. I mean, all of them deserve it. It should be a three-way tie.
It's tough. Even in bisexual nonfiction this year, I'm up against my friend Sheila Lambert's book, Best mm-hmm. Bifiction. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not familiar with the other three books, however. So
yeah,
but we'll see.
You know, something about this year in fiction.
Yeah.
There were books that didn't even make it that should have been on the list this year. That's how many good piece of fiction we got. So it's great to have competition. I hope you both win. I hope everybody. I hope they just like. I hope they just like have like lots of gold medals. At the
well, we've had this.
And
we've had this great.
And you get a Lemmy. And you get a Lemmy. And you get a Lemmy.
Hey, man, you know, it's like
we've had this recognized.
Like how great a year it's been for us in disability, and the
yeah.
books really helped us. All the books really helped our 2014-2015 disability campaign.
It really has, and we have our writers to thank for a lot of that. So, yeah, that's fantastic.
Well,
and I want to put kudos out to all those independent publishers and organizations that help get those things going too. And that brings me to a subject I wanted to ask you. We always plug our the publishers. Can you just tell us who published for you?
This is published by Levy Press. They published mm-hmm. both of the volumes of the Mullah Nasruddin volumes. And I'll tell you, my publisher, Steve Berman, I just owe a huge debt to, because these books are very, very weird and queer. And particularly in the second one, there's a lot of really inappropriate stuff, you know, so that he was willing to basically let me go with whatever I wanted to publish in this case, it was really great.
Yeah. I will say we were going to talk about that a little bit. There are some really horrible stories in there. I mean, like, you know, I mean, corporal rape, there's a lot of corporal rape in it. And like, yeah. you know, I just think like, Abner Louima, it's just like, you know, he just come on my brain today as the modern victim of corporate rape. That's like all throughout the book.
Well, the vast majority of the sexual stories are actually with, donkeys. So, I mean, you can hardly say that, you know, that part is hardly weirder than the part that's about, you know, non-consensual sex or the scatology or any of the other inappropriate topics.
But I would say the misogyny. I mean, poor Fatima. I mean, my God, he treats you like crap.
Well, but in many of the stories, she is depicted as the sexual aggressor.
Yeah, I saw that too. I saw those too.
So
but, you know,
in this book, the you know sexuality is really messed up with a whole lot of other stuff.
That's
part of the reason why it's appropriate for the bisexual literature.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's like you're just trans. You're just the translator.
Yeah,
you
I really.
Know, you're not. You know, you're. I mean, and it's necessary. It's necessary to have out. You know, I did have to go to Rumi last night and kind of wash my mind out with
a mental.
About God and the angels and how the world is so beautiful. I needed to look. It's like you have to have a little dose of each.
a little mental palate cleansing, I right?
Exactly.
Well, I understand. I mean, there's a lot of it that's disturbing, as I, you know, commonly point out, because I don't want anyone to be under any, you know, illusions as to, you know, the, you know, adult content of this book. It's really, there's a lot of really out there stuff. And, the, you know, if you have two overlapping circles, one circle is, things that are very, very funny, and the other circle is things that are very, very wrong. There's this huge overlap between the two.
And artists are still trying to figure out where those lines are. I mean, like, you know, modern artists are still trying to figure out those lines.
Yeah. To tell you the truth, I was really surprised by what I found. I mean, I spent a lot of time researching and trying to track down these body stories that I knew had to be somewhere, you know, but it was quite difficult. In any case, I did manage to unearth a bunch of these body stories, and I should mention that how I got into this particular line of folklore.
I was going to ask about that.
Okay.
What interested you in old Ottoman folk tales?
Well, the character is actually a cognate among many different cultures, and I knew him best as Mullah Nasruddin, which is his name in Jewish folklore. My mother was Israeli, and she told me some of the very simple stories and jokes and punchlines when I was a kid. And then when I was in my 20s, I lived in an ashram, a residential yoga meditation center in various places around the U.S. for a good part of a decade. And while I was there, you know, commonly our teachers and other students would tell Mullah Nasruddin stories, usually to illustrate how not to be. Don't be this stupid.
Yeah, he doesn't come off good in a lot of those stories, man. He's just a lazy bum.
Yes, and that's why I characterize him as the wise fool. You know, there are times when he's the smartest guy in the room, and he outwits everyone. And at other times, he's the absolute butt of everyone's joke.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the same thing was going around, you know, not just in, you know, Asia, Eurasia, but in Europe. I can just think of Don Quixote, for instance, and the fools in that, you know, pre-Renaissance Italy, you know, like this medieval, you know, the medieval Italian poetry, some of it was like beautiful and brilliant and, you know, stills up on chapels and such. And some of it was really bawdy and like, you know, some was suppressed for lots of years because I would imagine some of these stories that you've uncovered were ones that were harder to find.
Yes, they were. You know, my first sources were just printed collections. I've been to Istanbul a couple of times, three times. And when I first went there, I got a number of Turkish printed story collections. That are illustrated, you know, with like different tableau of the different scenes and the punchlines. But these were like more or less geared for children and tourists. Mm-hmm. The ones in English, at least. So
we have our own rewrites of the German folk tales, for instance. They got rewritten a whole lot. So it's like, it's kind of, these are universal things, aren't they?
Indeed, yeah, and actually some of the stories I took from from an Italian folklore, Italian Popular Tales is the name of the book. His name, he's a whole variety of names. Mullah Nasruddin, in Turkey, he's known as Nasruddin Hoca. He's also sometimes just known as Hoca or Juha, and Abu Nuwas. There's a variety of names that have the same have the same stories, and so they're really character cognates.
Yeah, so, you know, when I think of Mullah, I think of Mullah, and so it's interesting how that name's not used in Islamic countries as much.
Yeah, I mean, he's also in the ashram. Our teachers used to call him Sheikh Nasruddin. So it doesn't really matter. It's just an honorific.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are.
I kind of know enough that history that I kind of know who they were at then.
Yes. Well, maybe let me explain a little bit more about the character. He's more than 800 years old, and Turkey primarily claims him, but you know, his stories you know, are told and retold still throughout, you know, a great part of the world, including the West. There are a great many stories. The first book had I divided into seven parts with seven sections each with seven stories each. So the idea is that you would tell seven at a time. And so that way you sort of have nice bite-sized chunks that you can chew on. And the first book was won a couple of National Storytelling Awards. And in the reviews, the several people mentioned that it would be great if I would to, you know, publish a second volume of all of the, you know, material that I didn't put into the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, okay, let's see what we can do. And it took a lot of resourcefulness, and I had to basically feed the contents of several books in different languages through Google Translate, and then and then trying to make sense of them. Plus, also I hired a translator and such, and so it took a lot of research, but it was really, really interesting. And, you know, eventually did manage to find you know, some body tales that the hardest thing to find were things that were of overtly homosexual content. So, mm-hmm. Which is odd considering that we know that there's a huge, you know, homosexual, you know, part of the life of people who live in rural Turkey and that part of the world.
No, that I don't know.
Right. So those were oddly the hardest to find. Even putting out a call to the Turkish bear group couldn't yield any stories. But I managed to find a few here and there.
Oh, wow.
Well, you know, like, all religions try to sanitize their past a bit in the ways that they want to.
Yes. Well, there's, you know, there are two basic things. So one, which was the advent of printing, which, you know, so the oral tradition of some of these stories were diminished. And so we did lose, you know, some of them that were only in scholarly papers and such. So it took me a while to unearth the papers that I wanted to, that I knew that were out there. Not having a college affiliation, it was, you know, it was a challenge. But I connected last year. I connected with a Turkish studies scholar by the name of Haki Gurkaş. And he sent me all sorts of materials, including his brilliant dissertation, and he was really, really helpful in helping me put the last stories together. So the second book has about 260 stories, and the first one has more than 360 stories.
Yes. And some of them are just a paragraph long, so.
Yes.
Yeah, some are very pithy, and some are really, you know, involved stories.
So, John, you had the next question, or did we already talk about that?
Oh, I think we're, yeah, I mean, and go to, you're on page two. I mean, we've done most of these questions in various ways. Let's talk about future projects and such.
Sure. Well, I'm working on putting together the audio for this new book, which is done. We'll do through Audible.com.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided that even though I was very happy with the results of the audiobook for the first book, for Uncommon Sense, I just felt like I should do this one myself. So, I used to have a podcast myself called Bear Soup and, had 99 episodes. I enjoy reading and, I enjoy doing vocal work. So but that takes quite a bit of time. So.
But you know how you want it read any better than anyone else does. So that would be.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just
I love the author reading their work, you know.
Well, and I'm curious.
The voice.
I'm curious. Were these oral stories to begin with that were written down? Because they, you know.
Yeah, these all came from oral tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And the most popular ones I included in the first book, which is really, I mean, it's really suitable for a general audience. There's really, there's like some fart jokes and such, but it's really, it was meant for a general audience. The second one is much more taboo material.
Well, you make it quite clear at the beginning with your disclaimer that it's a enter at your own risk kind of a thing. So.
Yes. Well, you know, and the amazing thing is that I didn't make any of it up. And so that's why, I mean, it's kind of like, I can say, well, don't blame me, you know, blame my sources. And, got four pages of, sources listed in the back of the book.
Right. So, yeah. Have you gotten any kind of, feedback from, let's say, of the feminists? Because, speaking as an older disabled woman and a feminist, I kind of had a real problem with one of the stories, and I was just wondering if you've gotten any kind of feedback. Negative feedback.
I haven't really gotten any reviews of the book. I mean, someone on Amazon gave it one star and called it silly, but it's a Turkish joke book. What do you think?
Yeah.
It's not going to be silly. So
but that's what it's.
No, but I haven't gotten really. I haven't. Gotten any academic, or critical feedback on the book? No, I'm looking forward to it. I'd like to see someone's assessment of the totality of the folklore that I've presented here, and to take a serious look at it. I mean, I borders the it runs a fine line between the border between obsession and academic fastidiousness of
It's always good to have discussions, open discussions, and because that helps we learn and grow and exchange ideas. So that's always it's always a good thing to have happen.
Lynette, if you'd like to talk about what that story meant to you now, that would be fine too.
Oh, it is the story of where he was helping the women cross over the river, and I don't have any problem with him taking off his clothes, that's no problem, but one of the older women that was left last was lusting after him, which I don't have a problem either. But, she said that she was in love with him, and there became a boundary issue, and it was kind of rapey for me. And as a disabled person, I felt like she might have been taken advantage of. I didn't really understand what the farting was out. So, you know, that was my concern. That's from my viewpoint. So I don't, you know, the joke may have went right over my head.
The humor is in the unexpected twist where the old woman seems to be taking the role of the sexual aggressor. And, you know, to tell you the truth, I mean, it was a story in German that, was very difficult. It parallels another very popular story where he had 10 blind men on a raft, and one of them, but he was such a clumsy oarsman that he, midway across the river, Nasruddin knocked off one of the men, and then somebody said, "Oh, what was that? I heard a splash." And Nasruddin says, "Oh, don't worry about that. I have great news for you. When we get to the shore, you'll have one less fare to pay."
So he's kind of a cad then.
Kind of have a little follow up here, because as you were talking, you said like this story was translated from the German, and you know, did you find any German translations that were unfair to the Turks, because, you know, we know that there's a history between those two powers. And so, kind of counting for that they're going to have a bit of a Islamophobic perspective in their translations?
I'm not so much sure of that. I mean, there's a wide variety of ethnic humor in various jokes in the book, including Jews, a number of cases where Nasruddin is pitted against a Jew for one or another reason. They mentioned the Kurds, which is another ethnic minority, as a joke, he got a job, Mullah got a job teaching Kurdish, but he didn't really know a word of it. So, he started with the student and, said, first, it's the word for hot soup, is ash. And the boy said, "Well, okay, well then what's the word for cold soup?" And Nasruddin says, "Well, the Kurds only drink their soup hot. So there's no word for cold soup." So, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, semi-innocent ethnic stuff, but there's not really, a lot of anti-Turkish sentiment that I was able to, get. It's from a very reliable, German, Turkish academic.
Did you also see stories in Yiddish? Because there's a Jewish tradition of them?
In Hebrew, yes.
Oh, okay, but not in Yiddish. They weren't taken that far.
Well, the books wouldn't be. I don't know if there are any books in Yiddish. I wouldn't understand them at all. I mean, I can nominally read Hebrew, but no, there are. I have actually two books of Nasruddin stories in Hebrew.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's a good thing. I can read English.
I know a lot of kids that could read Hebrew for a couple weeks before and after. Then it's like, oh well.
That's how I do it. Yeah. That's how I am with algebra. I know it a couple weeks before the test, and that's it. Yeah.
Well, I had to pass the test.
I've had a little exposure to a lot of languages. Took 3 years of French, 3 years of Spanish. I'm fluent in sign language. I can also read Devanagari, the Hindi script, and as well I can read Hebrew phonetically. Not very well, but somewhat.
Yeah, I'm like that with ASL. I can follow a conversation very, very, very vaguely, but I can't remember how to do anything. So
yeah. Well, and one's receptive skills are always better than your productive skills.
Yes.
As far as language goes, but it required the translations required a lot of help and consultation with friends, you know, German, Turkish, and Hebrew translators that I relied on.
I worked years ago on a project retranslating the Bible into inclusive language, and so I know that world.
Whoa, that's
I'm not
a big
linguist,
project.
Though.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it works pretty well for German, like just Google Translate.
Mm-hmm.
Works pretty well. But for Turkish, it's impossible. So, you know, I know that there are still yet Nasreddin stories that I have not been able to uncover, but I think this is going to be it for me.
let the next guy take the next step. You know, you already done first two. Just continue.
Yeah, and it was pretty big projects. So, speaking of projects,
I have been working on it for a good part of 10 years.
Yeah.
And speaking of projects, I have. I'm really happy to announce that I am putting together a second collection of bi men's erotica, a bi guys volume 2, which will be printed by Levy Press, who's the publisher of the volume 1.
And what is the date for submissions?
I'm reading stories now. Basically, the end of the year is when I'm looking to get stories in by, and I'm looking for stories between 3,500 words and 6,500 words.
You hear that, guy?
What, Ron?
I say, if you can't tell your stories in less than 6,500 words, then it's not for us. So, and it has to be erotic. I mean, romantic/erotic. Mm-hmm. So that's its intention. And the complete call for submissions is up on my website, which if I can give it to you, I'll spell, is ronsuresha .com. And that's Ron Suresha. And also, while you're writing down your websites to check out, please do also check out MullaNasreddin.com. That's MullaNasreddin. And that has excerpts from the books, including the foreword and a whole bunch of mostly appropriate for, you know, the internet jokes.
And does that have excerpts in the first book too?
Yes. I started putting things up on the web, stories up on the websites when I had the first book, and so I'm continuing to do that with the second one. Not everything, but just little samples. I have Mullah Mondays. So
Mullah Mondays.
Mullah Mondays. When I bring out a new new joke.
I will go check that out, and all links will be provided on our website.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to add?
I'd just like to say that, you know, I think that we're really at a amazing time in the state of bisexual liberation. I'm so impressed with Governor of Oregon, Kate Brown, who's an out bisexual woman, and I just think that, you know, while we need more progressive leaders like her, so that's very heartening. I mean, there's still a lot of biphobia and a lot more education and acceptance that we need to work for. I think we are starting to see some real progress.
I have to agree with you, and I'm pretty proud of my governor, Kate Brown. You know, that's where I am. I live is in Oregon.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I do say I do think so, we are making a lot of progress. Hmm?
When are you going to interview? Say, when are you going to interview her?
Oh my gosh! As soon as I can talk her into it, I don't. She doesn't know we exist, so.
send her shout outs.
Yeah.
I will just say that, you know, it was great to have our bisexual governor pass and sign the conversion therapy outlaw,
yes,
because I'm working on that issue, and it just makes me so happy to see how well we're doing with our issue right now. So,
yeah.
And, it,
yeah,
and to have the bisexual governor do it was just like icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it demonstrates that she has a clear sense of what she can do legislatively to combat biphobia. And the conversion therapy is the absolutely worst aspect of that. So I'm very, very impressed with her. So, way to go.
And the whole time. She didn't just come out. She's been out the whole time, so she knows what's going on.
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah.
Well, I would be so impressed if you got an interview with her. You should try.
I'm going to try. I think I will try.
Yay!
You're a constituent.
I'm a constituent.
Constituent.
So, John, you
right.
out of here?
You guys are, you guys are great.
Well, thank you. Yeah. We love what we do.
Well, thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and thanks for all that you do, covering as many aspects of the bi community as you do. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Remember, everybody, you are not wrong, you are not broken, and you are definitely not alone. You are a human being, and you are bisexual. Bye. The views expressed on the Bicast do not necessarily represent those of Binet USA or the Bicast crew.
Look at that.